Naps. Napping is too luxurious, too sybaritic, too unproductive, and it's free. Pleasures for which we don't pay make us anxious. Besides, it seems to be a natural inclination. Those who get paid to investigate such things have proved that people deprived of daylight and their wristwatches, with no notion of whether it was night or day, sink blissfully asleep in mid-afternoon as regular as clocks. The American nap is even scarier because it's unilateral. Sleeping Frenchmen are surrounded by sleeping compatriots, but Americans who lie down by day stiffen with the thought of the busy world rushing past. There we lie, visible and vulnerable on our daylit bed, ready to cut the strings and sink into the dark, swirling, almost sexual currents of the impending doze. But what will happen in our absence? Our stocks will fall, our employees will mutiny and seize the helm, our clients will tiptoe away to competitors. Even the housewife, taking advantage of the afternoon lull, knows at the deepest level of consciousness that the phone is about to ring. And of course, for those of us with proper jobs, there's the problem of finding a bed. Some corporations, in their concern for their employees' health and fitness, provide gym rooms where we can commit strenuous exercise at lunchtime. But where are our beds? In Japan, the productivity wonder of the industrialized world, properly run companies maintain a nap room wherein the workers may refresh themselves. Even in America, rumor has it, the costly CEOs of giant corporations work sequestered in private suites, guarded by watchpersons, mainly so they can curl up unseen to sharpen their predatory powers with a quick snooze. A couple of recent presidents, famous for their all-night energies, kept up the pace by means of naps. Other presidents, less famous for energy, slept by day and night. Woe to the unwary footstep that wakened Coolidge in the afternoon. This leaves the rest of us lackeys bolt upright, toughing it out, trying to focus on the computer screen, from time to time glancing furtively around to see if we were noticed. The modern office isn't designed for privacy, and most of our cubicles have no doors to close, only gaps in the portable partitions. Lay our heads down on the desk at the appropriate hour, and we're exposed to any passing snitch who strolls the halls enforcing alertness. It's a wonder they don't walk around ringing bells and blowing trumpets from 1 till 3. American employers do not see the afternoon 40 winks as refreshing the creative wellsprings of mere employees. They see it as goofing off. But now, it's time to rethink the nap from both the corporate and the personal viewpoint. Bed is not a shameful, shiftless place to be by day, nor is it necessary to run a fever of 102 to deserve it. Bed can even be productive. The effortless horizontal body and the sensory deprivation of the quiet bedroom leave the mind free, even in sleep, to focus, to roam, sometimes to forge ahead. Knotty problems can unknot themselves as if by magic. Creative solutions can tiptoe across the coverlet and nestle onto the pillow of the napper, even while the black velvet paws of Morpheus lie closely over his eyes. He may wake half an hour later with the road ahead laid clear. Creativity doesn't come running to those who toil and slave for her. She's as much the daughter of rest and play as of effort. Just because we're uncomfortable doesn't mean we're productive. Just because we're comfortable doesn't mean we're lazy. Milton wrote Paradise Lost in bed. Winston Churchill, a prodigious producer, wrote all those large, important histories in bed, brandy bottle at the ready. No doubt when inspiration flagged and his thoughts refused to marshal, he took a nip and a nap. Now there was a man who knew a thing or two about a good day's work.